performance that I see to acting in front of the country minor children and the minor health problems.
My name is Rosemary Fonda, and I'm carrying this performance for duration. Thank you. Should I say number? Kind of assembly. And I feel that you realize that and you forgive us for our ignorance. He wanted to meet the Provident Fund. He never knew that there were two, and it's a good learning for us to establish that they are two. So when we mix this one and the other, you'll have to come to our rescue. We'll appreciate your intervention on such. But we would want to give you a flow to make a presentation. Just to give a background of the committee. The committee was established as a result, established by Parliament as a result of complaints lodged by ex-mine workers. And the complaint related to their general benefit. And that resulted in a number of activities that might be known to you or not, but those activities led to the establishment of this other committee to investigate the validity of the complaint and locating the complaint to a position where the complaint could be solved. That is the duty of this committee, to investigate various or to solicit information from various stakeholders, so that in the analysis of the information received, we can recommend to Parliament that the only entity or the only department that could deal effectively with this matter or with this complaint would be this one, according to the information received. Or it could be a joint responsibility of multiple stakeholders or departments. We have met various government departments. We have also met the representative of the Eastern Cape government, because the problem is seemingly in the main located in the Eastern Cape, while those who are presenting the program have a claim that it's a national. We're just worried that it doesn't become a continental. It's a national problem. And perhaps with the information that we'll receive from you, it could be a continental problem, and it would be massive for the country. We wouldn't want to see ex-mine workers coming from Zimbabwe coming to this country to make a claim, and other Africa or African countries. But so far up to this point, the problem has been confined in the country and in the main, in the hope it will remain like that, because the complexity of it makes it difficult for a single department or a single stakeholder to do this. So with that very scanty background, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you will understand the kind of, you know, of information that we. Thank you very much. We have to keep on reminding me about the name. I don't know, you are ready to present the figure.
Chairperson was after my chairman has given his opening remarks at the end.
Okay, so that's fine. Do it the way you would want to do it.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome, Tony. So the Labour Department is so interested in this problem. Oh, one wonders.
Thank you, Chair. And you have outlined the background of the committee. As mining camp, we have been receiving some people who are having some problems being ex-mine workers. But we have been receiving those complaints via the National Union of Mine Workers, because as we all know, most of the workers in the mine belong to the Mine Workers Federation, I mean to the National Union of Mine Workers. So to us, to be here today, I'm sure it is important, because this is an opportunity for the fans to explain some few things that are of the interest of everybody in South Africa, but not particularly in South Africa alone. As I'm talking to you now, for instance, yesterday, I know of a delegation that was supposed to be at the head office of the National Union of Mine Workers from the city. So, at some stage, I think this fund will also have to go and address a committee to the city. Because that was an indication of some things that even the Labour Department there would like to get such information from the hospital. So we are waiting for such indication. Now, I will not be presenting, but as we have indicated, our acting CEO, Mr. Sikosiju, will present our case, and I will fill in there and there if there's anything that we might leave out. And I'm sure our member trustee as well, Mr. Rasmus, will do that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, request Mr. Chairman, may I have please stand up? And like a
thank you.
As my chairman put it, we are the Mine Workers Program Fund. I think the committee chairperson has indicated that you're not sure how the two funds differ. How do you fit in the topic? We will just give you a quick presentation of Mine Workers Program Fund. I will try and be very quick so that we could allow more time to the issue of the Mine Workers look at him, the critical issue here is understanding issues surrounding the 1970s and part two, like minus by the process, public response, out of those respective funds. this is the proposed agenda, Mr. Chairman. If there is anything that you would like to know that we're not touching on, please feel free. We will be able to talk to any issues that relate to mining. Just quickly on the history of the fund, we started in 1989 with about two sponsors, one being the National Union of Mine Workers, the other being the Chamber of Mines. We are we're first fund for mine workers. We're a defined contribution fund that essentially means we will offer lump sum when members access the fund, or our members have an option of taking out a lump sum when they access the fund. The reason why we were formed, it was really to address and deal with the problems that miners were experiencing in terms of retiring into poverty. We do have a few service providers. I don't think I'm listing them there for information purposes. You would note we are very, we're big on independence, so there is no one service provider that does all the services. So there's checks and balances in terms of the independence of the service providers. As I've said, Mr. Chairman, we are a provident fund. We are managed by a board of 10 trustees. Five of them are appointed by the National Union of Mine Records, and the other five are appointed by the Chamber of Mines. We honored today to have the chairperson of the fund, as well as the Chamber of Mines trustee, or the employer trustee in the fund, Mr. Gillespie. The duties really, they stem from what the Act provides. They direct, control, and oversee the operations of the fund. They act with UK diligence. It's essentially about protecting member interests. That's all what it is in a nutshell. There are contributions. Retirement contributions range from 14% to 16.5%. We are a fund that operates right across different mine houses. So we've got coal mines, we've got gold mines, and we've got other non-timber mines in the fund. So that's why we have the different or the various contribution splits, because we can't, not the same contributions are applicable to all the mines. The retirement contributions are invested with investment managers, and risk contributions are paid to insurers, to underwriters, to actually provide us with the risk benefits that we provide our members. Just quickly, what do we offer on with the withdrawal benefits? If you dismiss, resign, or you retain, which our ex-miners would actually have to establish which category they fit in that active benefit. We offer the total contribution that has been paid to the fund. We offer any total voluntary contribution that the member may have made. We offer any total transfer portion. Sometimes members move from one mine or one fund to the other. They move the benefit across. And then we offer the net investment return on that benefit. And then depending on how they take the benefit, so if they're catching the benefit, it will obviously as I expect. If they're transferring the benefit to another provident fund, it will be tax-free. They have an option of deferring the benefit in a month, and then so on. They could transfer it to retirement annuity, they could transfer it to the new employer fund. Really, the option becomes the member's. Retirement, early retirement is at 50 for underground members, 53 for members on the surface. Normal retirement age is 60 and 63 respectively. There is a late retirement up to age 70, that is an agreement with the employer. What is our retirement benefit? It's again very simple. I think you would appreciate that the nature of the defined contribution from the fund started to make this thinking, if you don't have an explicit formula of result to requirement, then that is exactly what it is. The total contribution that we can put, in the fund, any additional contributions, investment returns, and then you have an option when you retire in our fund, you can take your 100% lump sum, or you can buy a monthly pension, or you can take a mixture. What happens when members die in our fund? They get 3 times annual earnings, they get the total contribution and all the interest that they would have earned. Obviously we are a provident fund, so we are subject to the Pension Fund Act, so when we distribute benefits we apply 37C. We have funeral benefits. The scale is shown. If members die, they get both the death benefits as well as the funeral benefits. And then you also have what you call a terminally ill benefit. Sometimes it happens on early retirement or on medical grounds. Then our members get their total contributions that they put in the fund plus investment returns. And then the employer continues to pay for death benefit premium. So if you terminally ill and you die within 12 months of being discharged or being reduced from your workplace, you would still be entitled to a death benefit in the fund. And I think this could again be a talking point to our tax minor. really, the first benefit is very simple. You leave your benefit in the fund, that's through early retirement or normal retirement. There is a minimum of 10,000 that the fund says. There are no further contributions to the benefit. The short benefits, the death benefits, the accrual benefits, they choose to exist because you're no longer an active member of the fund. we also are not shy in terms of our investments. We've done, we believe we've done reasonably well in delivering, building some retirement sort of satisfaction or packages that our members are comfortable on. Our numbers are on the screen. If you look in 2002, we're sitting at 6 billion. We're sitting at more than 5 debt now. 2007, we're sitting at 15.4 billion. And it's all managed according to Regulation 28. It all doesn't, it doesn't have the funds of this finding its way into people's accounts. And then the investment returns, we are showing you our investment returns again, Mr. Chairman. This is the part that excites us at the fund. This is the value that we're able to add to our members. This is what we're essentially about, making sure that they retire comfortably. You will see the first column is empty. Over 7 years annualized, we've delivered a 17% return. If I may add, Mr. Chairman, that in that 17% annualized return, we were able to do so with over 50% of our assets being guaranteed. So the protection against the downside in the market is very massive at this time. We have very, very fewer chances of us getting to a stage where we could declare a negative return. When you see from the market related, it's 18.9 over 7 years. It's a 1.9 difference. For us, we're not chasing what the market is doing because our investment strategy, understanding the literacy levels of our members. Our members are members that want to put 100 rand and at least get 100 rand back. Our members do not understand putting 100 rand and getting 90 rand back, and you explain that it's market volatility. Your money is going down, so they're not that type of membership. So our investment strategy takes that into account. We're showing you all mutual guaranteed numbers because a huge part of our, about 50% today of our assets is in that guaranteed product. So that's the product that would not declare a negative return. We do have housing loans. that we offer for our members. You would recall that after the KZN flood, the Pension Fund Act was amended to provide Section 19 compass to enable workers to access funds from retirement savings for housing purposes. We do know that sometimes these funds get abused, they're not strictly utilized for housing purposes, but we have provided a vehicle in the fund because we constantly we face this question to our members of saying, what is the point of me having all this money to retire when I can't provide food for my kids and now as I work? But it is a way of trying to assist. If used properly, it is a very good platform. So we do know it has its own challenges. And on the X minus, which one is the part that we have spent time on. Sorry if I've rushed the task of the session, but I was just trying to sketch a background of who we are. So there's as a PF, we believe we are friends. So we're given an opportunity, we have to face who we are when we come from. With X minus, I wouldn't cover much on the history, because the fine experience that they would be able to do where we actually come from. But to just say for us, as MPF, to explain the relationship we have with our other rights from the 1975. As MPF, were a fund that was established in 1989. There was a fund already existing, the 1975 Project Fund. So when we came into things, there were members that were given an opportunity to elect transfer to our fund and transfer to the other funds that the employer or the sponsor participated in. The three main funds, the MPF, the Sentinel, the MEPF. So those are the funds that NUM and Chamber participated in. So members in the 1970 fund then were given an option to transfer to any of those three funds. We do, when members move from one fund to the other, there is a requirement in terms of the pension fund act, Section 14. The funds have to apply for a Section 14 transfer. It's a very simple process where the FFD is the regulator. Tries and make sure that if I'm a member in Fund A, I'm entitled to transfer 10 rand. If I transfer to Fund B, there is an independent check that my 10 rand is transferred across, that I do not transfer 8 rand, that I'm not shortchanged in the process. Now, there are, as I've referred, those members in the 1970 fund had an option to transfer to any of those funds. So we do have Section 14 that are pending, which are in this pack that we've distributed. Again, if you look at that point, if I may just talk slightly to that, Madam, Mr. Chairman, you would note that the number of members, we're not talking big numbers. These are members that in all likelihood would still be active, would still be employed, because they would then be going to the mine to say, look, I want to transfer my benefits out of the 1970 fund into MPF, Sentinel, or wherever, and then we would then start doing the Section 14 transfer. And then you would then get, we've got approved Section 14, so just to go back to the outstanding Section 14. So you may well find that some of the members that are inquiring about their benefits, they're part of that 23 members that we say are outstanding. So it is very critical for us at any point in time to be able to get a listing of some sort
from anybody who may claim or feel they have a benefit in the hype. Because I'll just show you a database now on all our spending benefits. Then we spoke to approved second footings. These are members that that their benefits are in the MDF fund. These are members that have a claim in a fund. They've gone through transferring their benefits out of the 1930 fund into our fund. So any one of those members listed there, we do have the listing. Any member listed here can come directly to the fund to claim the benefit if there's actually a Then we have the, in our database, we have what we call new contributors. If I may just quickly show you what it looks like, Mr. Chairman. It's a database that really looks something like that. It shows you the name of the member, the industry number, because in our industry, that's really the key number there. So we do have members that we're sitting within our funds that are not contributing at all. Now there are different ways one member should not contribute. One would be a member of the access of the fund and the claiming process that is started. Either the member responded or the mine failed to supply the required documentation to the fund to tell the fund that this member is no longer in my employ, please pay out this benefit. So in this list of new contributors, you could well find members that are saying the ex-miners that are saying we have benefits but we think we've left in December or noon if the group must process together. You could well find them sitting there in that list. Again, this list is available. My employer has started an aggressive plan to put this list on the fund website and start sending, distributing this list to the mine to try and find this member. But if there is a committee and the members have submitted a list, we'll be quite happy to go and check them against that list. That's our new contributors, Mr. Chairman. We then have what we call unclaimed benefits. These are members that we do not know what happened to them. These are members that have not come forward to claim their benefits. And I think we have to again remember the nature or the history of our country. Most of our members that worked in the mines were not aware of their benefits. And as a fund, perhaps in educating them, we could have done better. But the reality is some members, they just worked after the last trade list. That was it. They exit, they go back to the homeland to happily watch the cattle grazing. And then they forget that they actually have money in the bank. So we do have members that are seeking unclaimed benefits. Our unclaimed benefits list, we've got this, that we might have to send to the secretary of the committee that have all the information on this member. This gives an overview of what we're talking about there. We are looking at about just over half a billion in terms of rent value. We're looking at about 14,000 members. That's 22%. So as a fund, we're quite happy and welcome every effort that would assist us in tracking those members. Because we then left with an unfortunate situation where we have to spend the current members' funds to try and trace these members.
And some of these problems are situated by the way we operate in terms of our rules, that when you access the fund, you'll be able to pay you after 6 months before you exit the fund. But my employers are looking at those provisions with an intention of improving and cleaning up the 40,000 outstanding claims.
Mr. Chairman, through you, I can allow committee members to ask their questions and also allow the motion to be defined.
Thank you very much.
Before we can allow the committee to present. One thing that we would like to put in there, the challenge of the board, repeat, only for a 1 year between the member, trustee, and the director. So, any chairperson will be a chairperson for 1 year from either of the constituents. And then the second thing that one would like to get for is to, on the unclaimed benefit. I must say it has only been now written, but even now recently it's not totally accepted to the bulk of our members to inform the family about the benefit, particularly from the province. A member will keep that information to himself.
Why?
Well, taking our background and the tradition, it was not an easy thing for a man to inform his family that there is so much that I've got, and should I die, you must go and claim. No. That was not acceptable. Because that might perfect my death. You see? Yeah. So that is why we are sitting with such a problem. Because many of the families who are today the beneficiaries of those who were members do not know that there are these benefits that they are supposed to go into. Yeah. That is one of the main problems. Even up to date, it's not all of them who would go and tell their wife, family that no. This is what will happen, and should I die, not go. I just want to clarify the question.
If I may add, Mr. Chairman, to that extent, the board has developed a member booklet, which will be distributed this year to our members, which exactly talks to all the benefits in the fund, all the members' rights, how do you go forward in suing the fund if you're not happy with your benefits or things that have happened in the fund, and it gives all the details. And we're hoping that we'll be able to at least push our members to take that booklet home so that the beneficiaries would be able to claim should they pass on.
Thank you very much. I think that was the end. One is to say that a lot of interesting questions fire the church. So.
Thank you, sir. Chapter on slide page 4. I just wanted to know, with the amongst the ex-mine workers, who were they then? Who are now still, they are still alive, and some of them are ill. Is there anybody that comes or knows about the fund? Who are among them? Or are you taking care of those people right now? Who have been ex-mine workers who are still alive and who are ill? I heard the presenter saying it was 16.5%, but she says 16.50%. So I don't know which one is the correct one. Is it 5% or 50%?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the first question on terminally ill and his ill health benefit, if you really look at the benefit that we pay when our members are terminally ill, we actually pay them out the savings in the fund with interest. So anybody who was discharged from the mine on terminally ill benefit, they would have been paid out their benefit, and if they died within 12 months of leaving the mine, then they would be entitled to the insured benefit, i.e. they'll be entitled to the pre-time death benefit as well as the 10,000 funeral benefit. But take a member who acted on ill benefit and then survived the first 12 months and then go on to live. In as far as the fund is concerned, that member would not be entitled to any more benefits, because when he exited the fund, he would have been paid all his savings with interest. And then on the second question, Mr. Sherman, 16.50, I think the Honorable Member is referring to the retirement contribution. They range from 14% to 16.5%. It's 16.50%.
Can we follow up on the terminal ill people? Why 12 months? How long does it take for a mine related sickness to surface? I know it's a question that could be best answered by the health department. But you have your time period within which is 12 months. Where does it derive?
The 12 months derives from the point of view of the National Union of Mining that employers would medically repatriate those who are unfit to carry on their duty under that guise. But our view as the National Union of Mine Association is not particularly because one is unfit or cannot do any other job, but it is a guise of retrenching. Therefore then, as any end, we came up with a demand that said it should be 12 months to make it longer, so that at the end of the day, should that particular somebody be able to be fit within that 12 months, we would go back to the employer and say, here he's still fit. Now he has recuperated, therefore then he must come back to his job. Because we were not accepting it as a true opinion that one is sent home because one will never again defeat his job. That is my frustration.
Yeah, I could just add to that. I think there were so many benefits that float around the corporate world, and the three times earnings benefit is an insurance benefit. So you don't need to have ill health to get the benefit. In other words, accident or death due to any cause would elicit that benefit. I think what the NUMA negotiated is when you're employed, you have the benefit. Now, if you're no longer employed, through no fault of your own, you really ought to retain that benefit for as long as the insurance cover will allow it, which would be a maximum of 12 months for that three-time death benefit. But for long-term ill health, there are other compensatory programs outside of the three times death.
I have to do employment. As fresh as I am, at my own will, I exit your employment. After 2 years, I discover that I contracted because of my work condition, a sickness that is mine related. What is my record in that situation?
Chairman, I'm not an expert in the health and safety area. There are other people in the chamber who are. But my understanding is that the Act on occupational diseases and injuries in mine, as well as the COIS, actually compensate for those emergent illnesses as a result of work-related injuries in terms of diseases.
So with the funds, 12 months, I'm out of it.
Can I just clarify that 12 months?
Okay.
That 12 months, it does not mean for any sickness. It is only when one was terminally ill. Because the understanding of being terminally ill, 6 months will be too long for one to be still alive. Yes. It is particularly for terminally repatriated people, terminally repatriated workers.
Thank you, sir. So, for follow up on the very same way of terminally ill and after 6 months you can't leave, what if you leave?
No, after 12 months.
After 12 months, yes. No, you're terminally ill,
yes.
But you can't leave after 6 months. You'll die.
Yes.
And it happens that you recover after, even after 12 months, you still go on and leave. Because God does his own way, keeping a person. When we say this person, really, really, this person is gone, then God says, no, not yet. That person will leave. then what happens? Because you are saying, if you are terminally ill, 6 months is enough for you to leave. But God is the only one God who knows. I just want to talk
about that. Now, that is why I am saying, as any head, that is the demand that we put after realizing that even if one was repatriated medically because one was claimed to be terminally ill, some will live more than 6 months, and then after having been repatriated, he or she cannot come back to the empire. Right. Now, having experienced that, we demanded a 12-month schedule so that after 6 months, should one be still alive, we will go back and say, no. That means that diagnosis of that particular doctor was wrong. This person is fit to carry on his job. So take him back. That is what we are doing even after 12 months, should one be able to be fit to carry on with his job.
You confirm that X mine workers do have a case. That would be the one question. The other one would be, it's true that families of members or workers of mine workers or ex-mine workers would not be aware that there are benefits that are claimed by those workers. Mine would be even workers themselves. They would make contributions without knowing that there are returns on those contributions. Given what you said in your presentation, that some of these workers you cannot trace, what do you do in such situations where you know that a member made a contribution to the fund and that member vanished? Do you track the family or do you trace the member in that situation? The multiple of funds that you've just talked about, here you are two funds. One is interested in your relationship. In this event where you are sharing the same client base, how do you compare notes? Because you are sharing the same client base, and you've got the very same frustration. Perhaps they might not be frustration, but at this point in time, it has become a frustration that. I would ask whether you have a register of members who vanished without trace. Now you are these two funds that are sharing that kind of a frustration. How do you compare those? let me stop there so that I can get a response to your question of that.
Mr. Chairman, in the past, data has been compared between mine workers and the mine in 1970. And in a way, it has benefited the mine 1970 Provident Fund to allocate some of the members that were not easily traced by the fund itself. But with the comparing of the notes or the data, the mine 1970 were at least assisted in finding a few which were still active within the mine workers.
Okay. I think it was from that premise that the mine work study, the 1970 program fund approached the mine work program fund to see whether it was not better for the two funds to have this common understanding that the majority of the 1970 should be falling under the minor construction fund. But now, if there is a regulator that is in charge of overseeing the fund, that attempt was unsuccessful. Because after having received the presentation from the minister, the matter was referred to the FSC and similarly. And the financial support. But now, also in the minor transport fund, it was difficult because of these unclean, because we were also seeking a real security with unclean benefits. And the 1970 was also sitting in something there. Now, that will mean 1970 will, that burden will be off their shoulders and then unpacked on the minor construction fund when we are also begging to find ours. But at the end of the day, the regulator was not taking it down. If I
If I may add to what my leader has said, the members in terms of the pension fund act are only entitled to the benefits that are specified in the rules of the fund. Now, to the extent that these members are claiming the benefit that is in the rules of the fund, and they qualify for the benefit, they would have a case. Directly to your question, in this instance, the only claim, possible claim, I can think of that X minus could have would be for retirement savings that were left in the fund. Now, those retirement savings could be sitting at the 1970 fund. Those retirement savings could have been transferred, as we've shown in our presentation, those second 14 that were transferred. But in terms of members claiming a death benefit or a ill health benefit, chances of that, the chairman, are very slim, if not zero. And the reason for that is those benefits, as Mr. Rosner pointed out, are insured benefits. So they do have conditions. For instance, in a death benefit, you've got a claim before 12 months for that claim to be valid. And ill health benefit, you have that 12-month window. So members that are ex-miners, what we're quite happy to do as a retirement fund, if we can be provided with the data to compare and see if they are not sitting on our list that we say are unclaimed benefits, that we say are new contributors, we'll be quite happy to pay them out. But what benefit are we going to be paying out? We are going to be paying out a benefit that is their retirement savings, that money is deducted from them and saved in the retirement fund.
I think for us it will be very, very difficult to think yes or no. They don't have a case without getting the particular case. Because from 1989, when the mining transformation started, it was on a voluntary basis. Now, there were some workers who would not accept because of political opinion.
May I interrupt?
Yes.
You've got a pile of unclaimed benefits.
Yes.
You said, I asked you.
Yes.
Meaning that, that there are people out there who have a case of a claim from either fund. And therefore, the fact of the matter is that those people are either untraceable or need to be traced.
That's why we are saying those who claim that they are in the benefit, that we are not seeing. It would be proper that we get that information so that we look and check from the list of ours of the unclaimed, and not just to generalize, because once we do that, that will mean we will have to pay even those that have to pay their money, because mine workers would come and say, no, I was not paid. I was not paying my money when I was retired. And then what we'll do is go there and check from the administrator only to find out who was.
Yeah, I think
so we just don't want to accept
a blanket
and create an impression that no, we don't want that. We would rather be able to say yes, but let us get that so that we can check from our unclaimed.
I think that's area where we are carefully treading so that we don't open floodgates.
No.
There are opportunities out there who are waiting for this opportunity to prevail for them. One question, following what you are saying, where do you draw your data from? That is one question. The second question, have you been in contact with the ex-mine workers union? If you have not, why not? If you have, what is the nature of interaction that you have? I'm sure the name Mr. Nomazele would ring.
Well, as a fund, we will get into contact with them should they come to us. But now it will be improper for us to go out there and seek for people that we do not know. It's true, because the issue of Nomazele has been directed to the ex-mine workers as a union. Now, we are not a union, we are a fund. That is our problem. Now, should they approach us, it will only be them that will say, okay, let's sit down and hear what you are saying. Give us the data and then we check.
Just on the question of data, Mr. Chairman, we withdraw the data from the administration system that the administrator provides us every month when we get contributions that get loaded.
From your own process?
Yes, and I kept that on the system. So from our own data, we know when member A entered the system and when that member left the system, which is why we're able to generate the list of those unpaid benefits, because we're saying member A enters the system, is no longer active in the system, but he hasn't collected his benefits.
And that's not the
established
number,
that's
the interconnected fund. Chamber of Mines, 1 mile, 7, because we want to trace this chain. You are a fund, you get this chain at a mine. They are collected by the Chamber of Mines. They are recruited by Chamber. Now there is that administrative chain that ends up with your administration. Isn't there a connection between yourself, coming back to comparing the notes, with the team Rock Mine, with an intention of checking if it's killed? I know you might be checking to your administration. Who is killing the employee of mine and where absconded?
Mr. Chairman, let me try and explain the relationship. There is the Chamber of Mines and NUM, who are the sponsors to these funds. So, Chamber of Mines would employ a member, and a member would have a an option of belonging to these funds that are offered where NUM and the Chamber of Mines participate. So Chamber of Mines would have an employer-employee relationship with the member and would offer the member a benefit that are offered through the fund as part of the service agreement. And then the member would then belong to us or belong to Sentinel or belong to FDPS. And then from that point, as a fund, we then, Chamber of Mines and NUM, they came together and gave us rules that this is your Bible, you go and manage the fund. So we then administer the fund according to the rules or according to the agreement between the Chamber of Mines and the union. Now that member would then now is an employee of the Chamber, one of the mines, the Chamber of Mines, and then is a member of our fund. So you could quite well sit with two employees that come to the system, one goes to MEPF and one comes to us. The relationship is still the same. They all employees of Chamber, but it's just that one selected to belong to a different fund than our fund. Now we would then administer. Where Chamber comes in as a fund, and through the Pension Fund Act, independence is quite stressed very much. So as a fund, we have a board of trustees that have shown 10 trustees who then manage the fund. Without the interference of Chamber, without the interference of NUM, they then carry fiduciary duties as trustees of the fund, and their duties to act in the possible best interest of the member. Then from that point, then a fund as a fund can enter into any contract as a separate legal entity with any service provider for any services that it wants to use. So to that extent, then TEBA in the fund, although TEBA has a relationship with the mines as a recruitment agency, but the relationship that TEBA has with the fund is on tracing. When we have these members that we can't trace, TEBA becomes effective because they recruit these members, so they have the data. which is where they come in, then we say, we can't find these members, go and place them, we want to pay them benefits. And then they provide us the information, and then we're able to pay. They also feature in a fund, which is now recently as a home loan provider. So the relationship, all these institutions, Chamber, NUM, and the fund, they separate entities. The fund enters into contracts that it thinks would benefit its members as best possible, in best possible terms. And so that's the relationship. So TEBA has a common relationship in the sense that it's utilized by the mines for as a recruitment agency. It is also for convenience in terms of tracking those members where they disappear from our data. It is utilized by the fund as a tracing company.
If I could just clarify that the Chamber of Mines is basically an employer union. So it doesn't have a database of the employees or members of the family. So the database is of a separate TEBA as the recruitment agency. And that's why TEBA is able to render new funds to the 1970 fund very, very good tracing service for us. At a cost though. The TEBA has got an extensive database, current and ex-mine workers. And the next set of information is with the individual employers. So the mines have got payroll, but that would exclude ex-mine workers. They'll obviously know who used to work for them, but they won't keep a track of those ex-mine workers. They now keep a track of their current employees and contributors to the fund. And then the third database is obviously with the fund. So, yes, it's between TEBA, the mine, and the fund to try and correlate what they have. And you'll see from the Mine Plant and Business Extension Fund's presentation that they have, the fund has done a lot of work to try and correlate those databases. What's very interesting is in taking the database of the ex-mine workers union and comparing it to the Mines 1970s Fund's database, we located 18 members in common and variously different those 18 members. Some have already transferred or some have been paid, and 9 were actually paid out as a result of that comparison.
So this is what in progress?
That was work in progress with the ex-mine workers union. But what's very interesting is that TEBA has actually, under contract to the Mines 1970s Fund, embarked on a tracing exercise. In other words, not just comparing the databases, but going out and looking for the members. That's 416 rand a member, and some of the members are only entitled to 100 or 200 rand. And so here it's an extensive exercise. But they've had considerable success. They've managed to trace about 2,500 ex-mine workers in the last year. A lot of them from the Eastern Cape, who are not, as you can hear, on the ex-mine workers union database. I think that's an important distinction about the lobby groups there. Only 18 from the ex-mine workers union. But from TEBA's database, we're having considerable success. There are three principal databases, which is those in my employer, TEBA, and pension fund.
TEBA, you
No, President, Mr. Chairman, it is part of my presentation. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to ask. As well as we could ask people to
prepare.
Let me follow with the next question until after you finish. But I can see the cross-pollination of what has been presented and what is to be. If we were to allow you to make the presentation,
with the permission
with
the permission system, and can I also lose my
practice?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe it would be necessary to also start where the mine managers are going to be starting. And the core of their existence was to provide a benefit for its members on retirement, or present a benefit for their beneficiaries. In 1989, we experienced an exodus, dramatic as you may call it. That was when the mine workers were established. And I want to believe that not everybody was happy with the establishment of the mine workers provident fund, because some of the employers also started their own provident fund. Now, that is probably one of the other reasons of the mines 1970 not being able to sort of allocate, because the exodus not only was to the mine workers, but it was also to Harper Pierce, Lorraine, Impala, and Massacre and the Provident Fund. Some of them, they no longer exist, because probably their establishment was not for a good cause, but it was sort of to try and avoid most of the members going to mine workers' provident fund. At the beginning of 1990, the fund had about 32,982 contributing members, but by the end of 1991, we only had about 13,000 contributing members. In 1994, the Board of Trustees of the Fund proposed that the fund would rather than close to the employers. But in 1995, there was a change of heart. In August 1995, because the board was then advised to retain its status as a left member fund. And that the fund then approached the registrar, and it was registered as such. In the year 2000, the fund had no active members at all. And the only activity in the fund at that time, it was tracing the left members and to pay for those that could be traced. Since it had no active members, no participating employees. Now, it is of importance to note that since its inception, the membership contribution was only 250. A month. If you multiply 250 per month in a year, a person would only have contributed 30 rand. And the employer would have contributed 6 rand at 4 rand per member. So it was 6 rand 50. Unfortunately, the formation of the membership in terms of their employment in the industry, I want to believe that the industry was a little careless, in that whoever was employed, no addresses were taken. And because of not taking their addresses, it's now a legacy that is proving very difficult now for us to be able to face those people. And if you look at our Annexure B, you'll find that most of the people that were employed were from foreign countries. And the chairman did allude to the fact that let's hope this will remain nationally, with the mind 1970, we are constantly being challenged by people who are in the static region, who are forever inquiring as to what their benefits are. Fortunately, the understanding that is that most of those foreigners have been dealt with through their embassies, and most of them have been paid in food. So we can safely say, continentally, I don't think we have a crisis. Nationally, yes, we have a crisis. And also, the fact that most of our register show that their date of birth only reads 0101 and a year is also another factor that is contributing to our frustration, because people were only assumed, if I was to say I was born in 1960, it would be taken that I was born in 1961 or 101. Now, the producing of the ID makes it rather difficult and challenging for us to be able now to pay those people because of the differences in terms of their birthday. But through our experience, we are happy to say we do trace to a point of paying those with their different ID birthday. In the year 2000, trustees consulted with the FSB about alternatives to the Guardian Fund. The FSB advised the fund that it would establish a database of left members during 2001. And up until now, we have no such Guardian Fund. In recognition with what the fund was all about in the year 2000, the trustees applied for an exemption, because all that we were now doing, it was to service left members. And we are glad to say the FSB did grant us, or has granted us, the exemption on condition that we appoint an independent trustee to the board. Yes, we have alluded to that. We have an independent trustee who is neither a member of the chamber. He is an independent to the true extent. In 2001, we set up, or the trustees set up, a vigorous tracing mechanism to be able to try and do what we were all about. And we have engaged ourselves in visiting not only the mines, not only the communities, but to try and engage in many other funds that were of common interest with us. So that is the Mine Workers Provident Fund, that is the Mine Employees Pension Fund, that is also Sentinel, to try and match on a continual basis to try and find common members or common left members with them. As the chairman has asked a question as to are we engaging with the ex-miners, the mine workers union, we were fortunate in 2006 that they actually sent us a delegation with a list that had about 1,084 members, as Mrs. Arasmus has already elaborated. Out of that list of 1,084, we could only find 18 that had a positive match with our data. Out of that, 9 of them had already been paid. like my learned friend said here, it is important not to open a can of worms when we give out promises to these people, because once you do that, then you are inviting what you will never be able to control. So out of the list that the ex-mine workers union brought to us, some of those that were still claiming a benefit out of the fund had already been paid. Now, those out of the 9, 3 had already been transferred to other funds, and I want to believe that they were already paid. Only 6 were still outstanding or still had benefits with us, which we eventually paid them. We are, as an annex chart D, able to provide a list of those people that have been paid from year 2001 to year 2007. With the surplus apportionment, the Provident Fund advertised a nil surplus in the press, of which there was no surplus in that regard. In December 2005, representatives of the Mines 1970 Provident Fund met with the FSB, which is the Financial Services Board, to discuss the possible transfer of members of the fund and its assets to the Mine Workers Provident Fund. We have always been the advocates of transferring these left funds to the mine workers, with an understanding that the majority of those that left our fund in 1989 had actually moved over. We were not aware that people on the other hand have said not all that we thought had been transferred to mine workers were not actually to mine workers. That is why then our drive has been to transfer them to Mine Workers Provident Fund. And our understanding is that the Mine Workers Provident Fund would be the best home for our left members, because they, the mine workers, are still operating. And since they are still operating, they stand a better chance of matching their own data with our data in order to probably find those that are still contributing to the Mine Workers Provident Fund. However, the FSP was not in agreement with us, since they said sometime in April 2006 there would be an establishment of a state fund for unsafe members. So our effort was defeated to transfer those assets to MTF. The current status of the Mines 1970 Provident Fund. Our fund is audited annually, and we also submit our audited statements to the FSB on an annual basis. And the investment of the Mines 1970 Provident Fund total, almost, we had to put a round figure here so that we don't trip over what is exact, at the 200 million as at 31 January 2008. The number of left members which still need to be paid stands at 59,702 as at January 2008. And with the recent appointment of Sterba as our tracing agency, it has been discovered that this number could be less than what it is, because most of those members, according to Delta, are a duplicate, or there is a duplication, because once a person leaves the industry and gets employed again, he is issued with a new industry number from the old one. So in essence, you will discover that from the old one to the new, we hold the same person twice or thrice. The annual administration cost to the fund for each left member is approximately 33 or 27 rand, 2 rand 78 a month, compared to an annual charge of 240 or 20 rand a month per left member in other funds. The trustees retain the discretion to continue searching for left members until all avenues have been exhausted and there is no further likelihood of success. We have traveled far and wide. We have already been to Botswana. We have already been to Swaziland. We have frequented the Eastern Cape a number of times, but we have not given up. As I have already indicated, we have re-employed TEBA to be our major tracing agency, particularly with their database and all that they have in terms of assisting us to reclaim and pay those that have been left in our funds. In 2008, as we speak, the board resolved to obtain council opinion to inform the board of its remaining obligations towards the left members of the fund. The precise scope of its obligations towards left members of the fund and its options for the fund in the future, including possibly reopening its discussion with the National Union of Mine Workers. Under Annexure A, we list our efforts in the past time to show our efforts in getting these unclaimed benefits paid to those members who are unaware of their outstanding benefits. We have written letters to mines to try and solicit the assistance of the mines. We have visited the mines in order to speak to them. We have visited communities from as early as 2001 right up until 2004, speaking to the people. In the Eastern Cape, we actually also engaged the government communication information system to assist us. In the last visit that we had in 2004, we actually had a roadshow together with the GCIS, starting from Tambo Center right through to we went to Davangulu and right through to Bizana, where we also had worked together with the ex-mine workers union to try and assist. We found that the more we worked with the ex-mine workers union, it was becoming a problem in terms of us now being used by them to further their own ends. We have engaged the community centers. These are the people that have the experience of being involved in the industry itself. They set their own community centers and try and assist where they can. As it has already been established, we have matched our list of members with the Mine Workers Provident Fund, with METF, and also with the Sentinel. We have also gone and visited the mining hospital as much as the same hospital to try and see if they in their records had not had those members admitted for medication. We have also used the media to advertise without actually listing names of the people we were actually after. And those others actually gave us, it was like throwing a net into the deep end, into the deep sea, and coming forth with undesired fish. The responses as listed in page 9. Okay. Now, we have also used community radio in almost mostly in the major centers where we believe that's where we will definitely get a lot. And we are glad to say in the three areas, probably we are guilty of concentrating in some areas over above the others, in the sense that both the Eastern Cape, the Lesotho, and the Free State, and Botswana have been our major target areas. We have used their radios, community radios. We had some talk shows in order to be able to interact with those people through the radio so that it becomes a known fact as to what we are all about. And we've tried to sensitize the community in order for them to contact those they know that they have at some stage been employees of the industry. We have also, as I said, in February 2007, we agreed with SEPA at a cost that is expensive to trace members, at 416 trace members. We've also discovered that as much as it is costly, it is successful. So as the trustees are here all about that, we are glad to say we are trying the best that we can. And thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the time afforded.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Chairman, as I did make mention that we do get from time to time delegations or queries from those areas, since the industry did employ those such people, we try as much as we can to satisfy them. That is why our roadshows are on, not only limited to our country, but we also go to those areas where we know that there has been recruitment from.
But
are
you
assuring
that the funds are assuring us that their embassies are clinically linked to whatever might affect the process of us being involved in that kind of thing?
I can assure you through the Malawi Embassy, through the Botswana Embassy, that yes, we are interacting with those as well.
Chairman, one area that, as I must say, hasn't been touched on is Mozambique. And people officers drew a sample of the names from our membership there, from those that are untraceable, and you'll see that many of them could well be Mozambicans. Alberto, Mirani, Alfredo, and what we're probably, Sebastio, we're probably neglecting Mozambique. And I think the concerted effort has to be put in that country too.
There's nothing there.
thank you, Chairperson. I really think you people really, it's very difficult, because when you think of the Donbass and you take the ID, those things were far different. They are. That is why these people are not traceable. And what I just wanted to know is, are the mines today taking the names down, or what are they doing? Are they doing like the previous mines? Because really this, I mean, I'm working for you, I'm here daily, but when you want me, you have to go to my area. If I die here, I'm messed up, you can't even see, how will you go about to treat me? This was very a stupid arrangement of the mines, I must say. And what I just wanted to know is those people who left because the fund started in 1989, and those people who left in 1987, are they amongst the fund today? Thank you.
If I could